on the agenda is the approval of minutes from the last meeting. Don't everybody have a chance to review the minutes, but if everybody's reviewed it, is there a motion to approve?
All second.
Got motion in second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next up on the agenda, we got old business with a project update from Taylor.
So for the city of Henderson, they have a North Green River sidewalk extension project. This is to continue the sidewalk installation on North Green River Road that they the first phase will be this for. The city is working with KYPC to initially design the service, so it's at the very beginning of the process. Wart County project, Oakland Road. This is the third phase, the final phase of the Oakland Road project, and it has been moved to a January 18, 2018 meeting. It was originally on the November 15th. KYPC project, US 16, Henderson bypass to Waverly, the section that is paving going on is at Henderson Community College. This is the final round of paving, and to substantially complete the project, the target completion date is September. And then the US Highway 60 spot to Bridge, public meeting is scheduled for Thursday, October 19th, from 5 to 7, at the spot to elementary. There'll be a brief presentation at 6, and then the rest of the time, I was available to you to talk to your KYPC or consulting members at the project.
Anybody have any questions or comments? Being done, next up, we've got new business. We've got Craig with just administrative modification.
Yep. I think everyone's mostly interested in the occupancy presentation, so I'm going to try to be quick and simple. The only modification we had is a request from the city of Henderson. Their Wathaman Bridge project was scheduled in fiscal 17 in the old TIF. Did not make the letting, so we're rolling it over into the new TIF administrative modification with utilities and construction going back in fiscal 18. Utility cost $25,000, construction cost $200,000, and those are both 80-20 splits with federal STP on the local actual. No action needed. That's just for your information.
Anyone have any questions on that? Seeing none, open up to the Occupational Ohio River Crossing and my home is in the same section.
Appreciate everybody's time this morning. We've got about a 20-25 minute presentation here, so we've got a very high level overview of where we are with the I-69 project. And my name is Brian Aldridge. I'm with Sandtech Consulting Services. We're part of the Parsons team, and my responsibility on the project is I'm leading the traffic analysis that's currently kind of right in smack dab in the middle of that process right now. So I'm going to focus most of the presentation is really what we have been working on the last 6 months or so in terms of getting the Evans Building deal model updated and then how we're using that to start looking at the evaluation of our alternatives. I'd like to start off just kind of introducing the rest of the project team that's here today, and we'll start with Janelle Emmon. Janelle Emmon is the NDOT project manager. So she's generally here in the Evansville and Henderson office. As everybody knows, we have two field offices that have been located both sides of the room. We'll start with Mark.
Hello, I'm Mark Fuller. I work at Sandtech. I work on the town of Manhattan.
Steve Nightcase from Parsons. I'm the consulting team project manager.
Project manager, QICC staff.
So as everybody knows, we've been under contract really about since the first part of 2017, and so one of our early tasks was to try to get the model updated so that we could get a better idea of what the traffic is going to look like in the future on I-69. And so that's kind of been our focal point for the last, like I said, 7 or so months, is just trying to get the model just ready for use to evaluate the alternative we're going to be looking at. And so this is probably not new information for anybody. I've also provided a few copies of the handout that we used at the public meeting that talked about our screening process. We've had a couple rounds of public meetings thus far. Going back to April, we presented a range of corridors where we had essentially 5 build corridors named for roughly where they're crossing the Ohio River. So there were two. There were, we called West Corridor and they very closely followed the existing US 41 line. The difference was that West 1, essentially a block or so to the west of existing US 41, closer to Elm Street, and then West 2, essentially right on top of existing US 41. Those corridors were supposed to be built roughly at grade, with some grade separations that blocks and lanes where the interchange is shown being potentially constructed. And so to envision what the Lloyd Expressway looks like around Greenville Road, that's kind of what is in mind there with no traffic signals. So what I mean by that is that 41, we go over top of blocks and lanes and provide an interchange. So that's kind of what is in mind for that particular concept. Central Corridors 1 and 2 basically share a similar river crossing just to the west of the mouth of the Green River. The difference is really what happens in Henderson, I think some counties out of the river. The north side, we're tying in, originally what was proposed there was to try to tie in roughly halfway between the existing US 41 interchange and the Green River Road interchange. We're still looking at where that exact tie-in point needs to be. There are some sensitive environmental resources directly on the south side of I-69 that we're trying to minimize the impacts to. So the idea is to still provide an interchange somewhere in that area. We just don't yet know exactly where that's going to fall. But again, the real difference is what happens on the Henderson-Cannon side of the river. Central Corridor 2, the purple line, is really very similar to the 2004 draft environmental impact statement. What was going to be the preferred alternative? That EIS has ever been published. It does show the possibility of an interchange down at the Alvin Parkway. There's an interchange proposed, obviously, for the connection to I-69 was. Central Corridor 1 is a much shorter alternative that uses more of the existing, what was the Penny Rile Breckett Parkway that's now US 41, and comes off on new alignment just south of existing US 60. So that's just about a mile or so south of US 60. So it's supposed to use maybe that area. Walmart is right about there, so for reference. And then to the east, the corridor, called the East Corridor, is basically what was referred to previously as alternative 3 from the draft environmental impact statement back in 2004. So that concept required an additional bridge over the Green River in addition to the bridge over the Ohio River. So fast forward a few months afterwards, in July, we presented the results of the screening process. And so the screening looked at everything from cost to environmental impacts, and the results basically suggested that these three options had the best possibility to move forward. So we'll be taking into account all the impacts, and again, what the overall cost of the project was. West Corridor 1 and West Corridor 2 were both carried forward. Really, they're very similar. And again, the difference is the impacts within the commercial strip. So West Corridor 1 has primarily residential impacts. West Corridor 2 is primarily commercial impacts. So there is enough difference in terms of the impacts. We felt like they needed to be carried forward as independent alternatives, even though they are very similar. And then Central Corridor 1 was carried forward because it provides, it does give us a new river crossing to the east, significantly shorter than Central Corridor 2, and uses more of the existing roadway infrastructure than would have been used by Central Corridor 2. So the result, as you can see on the inside of the handout that I provided, you can kind of see the bottom, there's kind of a very high-level overview summary of each one of these concepts. And you'll notice that we're still talking about a range of costs. And the reason there's still a range there is because we're still trying to determine how long the structures might have to be. Part of the process we're going through right now is we're trying to determine exactly how much of the Ohio River crossing is actually going to have to become bridge versus what we might be able to construct on the field. So Kentucky and Indiana define floodway a little bit differently, but generally speaking, if you're building inside the Ohio River floodway, you need to build it on structure. But we're looking at some opportunities to build portions of the corridors on the Indiana side of the river with a combination of structure and field. So that's the reason there's that variation in cost, because you know, we just don't know yet. And so there's other variability as well, but that's probably the biggest factor. In addition to that, the main Ohio River span can vary substantially in terms of cost. We've been working with the Coast Guard for the last several months, including doing some navigation simulation modeling to determine just how long the main river span might need to be. In a worst case, and this is what we heard back in 2004 during that original draft of our impact statement, They kind of start off with a very conservative, you need 1,000 feet of clearance. Well, we don't have 1,000 feet on the existing 41 bridges. And our preliminary feedback thus far suggests we're going to be able to narrow that up a little bit. We don't know to what level yet, but we're going to trust right on that. But that can have a significant impact on the cost of the project. Just to give you an idea of what that cost might be, downtown Louisville, we just built a new bridge, the Lincoln Bridge, to carry northbound I-65 over the Ohio River. The main span there is about $750 a square foot. So it's a pretty significant cost. And if we can narrow the span up, we've also got the opportunity to use some different types of bridges that can be significantly less costly. So that could easily be a $10, $15, $20 million cost savings if we can get the span arrangements to get the piers located that will satisfy the Coast Guard requirements but make the overall bridge a lot less costly.
Like I said, my focus for today is really on the model update, and so just kind of getting into that with it now. The version of the model that we have started with was really initiated back for the original draft environmental impact statement. So at the time, it was expanded to include the 5 county areas that we have today. So I believe the original model was just Vanderburg and Henderson County. So it was expanded to include Posey, Gibson, and Worth counties. It's been updated a few times since that 2004 draft environmental impact statement, the last of which was the 2012. So our focus has been first to try to update the model to a more current base year. So we brought it up to 2016. And we're also at the same time extending it out to a more distant future horizon. Obviously, we're interested in how much traffic that will pay, of course, but we're really more interested in what our design year traffic volume might look like. So we've extended that out to 2045, where it was 2043. One of our ongoing topics of discussion throughout this last several months has been how much traffic is currently traveling completely through the region, and how is that likely to change as a result of constructing a newer, improved crossing in the Ohio River. We'll talk about that a little bit more in detail in just a few minutes. So just some census information with 2010 census. So this is some of the information that was used in the previous version of the model. Population in Evansville, 117,000. Henderson County, 28,757. The MSA overall, which does include portions of Western County, is about 358,000. One of our early tasks was to try to get the new socioeconomic data updates so that we could get the 2010 base year updated to 2015. So for those of you that don't deal with models, what it uses is basically where people live and where they work to estimate how much traffic is going to be on every roadway within the entire network. So that's exactly what we need to try to estimate is where all the households are going to be today and where they're going to be in the future, and then where are all the jobs today and where are the jobs going to be in the future. So we have some meetings over the course of, I guess it's in June, July. We met with each county individually, and we talked about the projections that we had available from existing sources. So population is kind of an easy one for us because we've got in Kentucky, the Kentucky State Data Center at U of L provides official population projections, and in Indiana, stats in Indiana are the same. And so we basically can rely on their information. We got to make blame, in other words, when we had to show information like this. So Henderson County is an example where the population is expected to decline. This is an issue all across the world, Kentucky right now, is that the more urban population centers are increasing in population, the more rural parts of the state can be in decline. Have aging populations, birth rates are in decline, and if there are counties that do have positive migration, people moving into counties, they're older people, they're retiring and they're not having kids. So this is a trend that, you know, based on census data between 2010 and 2015, this is what that trend line looks like right now. So we provided the same level of information at each one of those county meetings. We do the same thing with employment forecasts. The problem with employment is that, you know, it's very difficult to even estimate current employment levels. So there's not an agency out there that does employment
employment projections. We have to do our own. For proprietary stores that didn't buy the data, but we found that they tend to be extremely aggressive. And what I mean by that is they look at trend lines all the way back to pre-World War II era and just basically extend those lines on up. And so in most counties, even in Henderson County, where we would show this loss of population, they would show a tremendous increase in employment. And it just doesn't make sense. You know, there is a trend kind of nationwide right now that we're losing manufacturing jobs, we're losing those high-paying, formerly blue-collar jobs. A lot of that's being replaced with retail, fast food employment. And so in some cases, it might take two of those types of jobs to make up for one of those high-paying manufacturing jobs. So people are working more jobs than they were previously, and that trend is expected to obviously continue. But still, at the same time, it doesn't make sense. And we've got some projects elsewhere in Kentucky where a county of only 10,000 people, they're expected to lose 30% of the population, but employment projected, you know, based on those data sources you can buy, to increase by 50%. You know, doesn't pass the smell test. So what we do instead is we look at 25 years back of Bureau of Economic Analysis information to try to project forward a more recent trend line for employment. I'll show those numbers in just a second. So just some high-level information here on what we're seeing across the five-county area. So this is just focusing on population in 2015 and 2025. Overall, it's about a 0.14% increase per year for the five-county area. Worth County is increasing. I think that's the highest percentage annually of growth at 0.56% per year. And Posey County is the most negative, 0.76%. So even when we're going, for example, Maine and Posey County, we realize the county is projected with population, but we want to know are there bright spots, or the hot spots in the county where maybe there's going to be a little bit of growth, maybe it's going to be flat. So, for example, during those meetings, we were told, well, while the county overall might be losing population, New Harmony, maybe at worst case, it's going to stay flat. So we've used that information to try to update the information in the demand model to try to get an idea of what people are going to be looking at. Employment, you know, as I mentioned, even using the methodology that we use, we still show higher growth rates on jobs than we would see on population. But a lot of that is because people are commuting into these counties from outside of the five-county model area for employment. Obviously, Toyota is a perfect example of that there in Princeton. You've got people coming in from well outside of Henderson County area, in Owensboro and elsewhere, for those high-paying jobs. So that trend is also projected. So, the DEA, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, again, estimated employment levels of about 216,000 in 2015. We're expected to see about 259,000 by 2045. Any questions on the population or employment projections? So, again, the purpose of our meetings wasn't necessarily to refute these raw numbers, but it was to tell us we're going to allocate these numbers within each county. Tell us where the growth is likely to occur. Tell us where the decline is.
I have one question. So the employment projections, do those assume like a no-build scenario for the bridge, or is the Ohio River Crossing project going to have to have any impact on this?
So what's interesting about this particular project is that, you know, I-69 has already signed on both sides of the river. So Panama Parkway has been in place since the 70s. I-164 came in the early to mid-80s. So the growth is already occurring in Warwick County and Vandenberg County is already happening as a result of just the fact that those interchanges are there. And we've had an ongoing conversation with the Federal Highway Administration about the potential for land use changes. And our argument has been that, if anything, the trends that are already occurring might accelerate a little bit in place of this project, but the overall trend would remain the same. And again, we saw the growth in Warwick County. A lot of that is along the void, just on the east side of the interchange. A lot of the employment because of the hospital and a lot of the other development that's occurred and is projected to occur along the void is driving a lot of that growth in Warwick County. So what we would expect to see is that with any of the concepts that we're looking at right now, we're really talking about at most one new service center. we're not providing any additional access out there beyond what's already provided, with the exception of that central 401, which has one additional interchange on US 60. The western corridors, we're replacing signalized intersections with one interchange of Washington Lane, so the level of access is improved in that case. So based on that logic, we don't expect to see a tremendous amount of change in terms of land use as a result of the project. What we might expect to see is that if you look at the comp plan for Henderson County, you know, it's already recognizing, I believe anyway, that there's likely, it was going back to 2004 EIS, recognizing the possibility of an eastern I-69 bridge, and that US 60 would be a focal point, a gateway, if you will, into the city of Henderson. So there's already growth happening in that corridor. Is this going to change that? Probably not. If anything, I'd say it might accelerate it a little bit, but the growth is already there. So this is just the overall summary of population things for each of the five counties in the Mon area. So again, this is kind of our starting point, and then we use this information to try to determine where within each one of the counties that going to occur, so we can see what the impacts are on every single roadway within the network. Talk a little bit about the external travel issue. And what we mean by external travel is just typically it's a trip that's going to be going starting outside the five county area and ending somewhere outside the five county area. It may be in Nashville, the Indianapolis trip, or it might be just on the north side of Gibson County to Webster County. But it's simply not starting, and it's not for a destination within the five county area. What we know is that I-69 in the future is going to be an attractive travel alternative for a lot of different trips, but even this particular trip here we're showing in Indianapolis and Nashville. If you go to Google right now and search for your trip options between these two cities, these are the two options that pop up. And so even without the completion of the project, it says that I-55 is 89 miles, and you can see all the construction that's going along on I-55 right now. And the current trip without the completion of I-69 in the north is 319 miles. So once you get sections 5 and 6 of I-69 completed, and then you get the completion across the Ohio River here, this is going to be an extremely attractive alternative because it's not going to be nearly as congested as the I-65 corridor. You have a much more reliable travel experience. It's a pretty common occurrence to see a collision somewhere in this vicinity south of Louisville that may delay traffic an hour or more. So I would think that you're going to see a significant bump in traffic just because of this completion. Not to mention the fact that eventually you're going to have a good connection to Memphis and elsewhere. I mean, I-69 is not just a project between Indiana and Kentucky. The long-term goal is Brownsville, Texas, to Port Huron, Michigan. So again, we're looking at this being a corridor of international importance holding. So we try to look at as much existing data as we can to try to determine, number one, how much traffic is currently crossing the Ohio River and where they're going to or coming from. And so we look at things like census data from the journey to work data and look at just what are the commuting patterns back and forth between Henderson County and the four counties in the model area of Southern Indiana. And so this is just a summary of all of the traffic, the commuting traffic based on that census data that should have to use the current US 41 10 bridges across the river. So going from Henderson to one of the four counties on the north side is about 4,300 commuters a day. And then from Henderson County, going into Henderson County from the four Indiana counties, about 1,700 commuters a day. So if you add those up, at most, if everybody drove a vehicle on their own, at most 12,000 trips would be crossing, using US 41 to cross the Ohio River back and forth, essentially for users within the county. So that's just kind of one data point we've had to compare. We've also looked at what the traffic counts are to the north of the study area and on the south end of the study area. So if you look at the existing I-59, I-64 interchange and the traffic counts from NDOT around the interchange, it's got about 18,600 just north of I-64, 16.6 east on I-64, 16.7 to the west, and it increases to about 28,300 south of the I-64. So So based on that, we think you've got about 7,300 that are using this portion of Route 64 to and from the south, and about 7,200 vehicles per day using 64 west to and from Route 64. So again, of this 28,000, 15 or so thousand of those are coming in from Route 64 and not from Route 69. Traffic numbers in terms of truck percentages, that's also a very interesting question to be honest. Obviously, we're talking about tolling on this project, and trucks will pay a different toll rate. But at the same time, on external travel, for trucks in particular, we think it's going to be practical, frankly, if you're trying to do long-haul trucking operations between Tennessee and Indiana. So just looking at the truck percentages, so this is in the area of I-54 just to the west. We've looked at this elsewhere as well, but we've got as high as 40% trucks on the west side. Now, our US 41 crossing right now is only about 10% trucks, and about 80% of that would be semis. So while we had these extremely high truck percentages to work in the study area, they're not all crossing the Ohio River. In Kentucky, some similar information. So the Auburn Parkway has about 9,200 vehicles per day, 22% of which are trucks. I-59 south, once you get south of the Dixon Bypass, the traffic volume really starts to drop off there. You got about 36,000 to 38,000 on 41 through Henderson. The bridge crossing itself is 40,000 to 41,000 vehicles per day. But once you get this far south of Henderson, drop down to about 12,900. So again, 40,000 on the bridge, but only 13,000 as far south. So again, not a lot of that is obviously passing the through the region. Another data set that we acquired to try to help us answer this question, though, is from a company called StreetLight. StreetLight collects GPS data. So if you're driving in your car, you've got your Waze app turned on, they're collecting that information, and they're using that to analyze trip patterns. It tends to be a little bit better for fleet trucks because they, the long-haul trucks, if they've got GPS in the cab, it's collecting that information as well. The data set is just a sample, of course, because not everybody is using GPS at all times. So for autos, you know, we're maybe collecting about 10 to 15% of all trips. Trucks, it may be as high as 20 to 25%, but they're kind of the ballpark estimates. But, you know, again, it's just another data point that we can use in this analysis. So what we've looked at is trying to estimate, these are our kind of our external areas outside the model area, how much traffic is crossing the US 41 bridges from all of those external areas and passing fully through the region. So for automobile trips, of our top 10 origin and destination zones, only one of those is completely external. So for cars, phones, and bullets passing through the region, of our top 10, only one of those, and that's less than 2%. And so that is from I-64 west to I-69-31. We add up all of our externals, we're in the 5 to 10%. So we're pretty comfortable in saying that less than 10% of all the automobile traffic that's using US 41 bridges is completely passing through the region during the next part of the trip. The same thing, just looking at the trucks. These are those pairs I was talking about at the top 10. So while we do have quite a bit of external travel that's entering from 69 south, they're destined for locations in that not necessarily passing. Looking at the same information for trucks that we just did with autos, our top 10, three of those are truck trips. So that's from, again, that same west, 64 west area to I-69 south, about 12%, that's our highest. And then we've got 5.7 and 4.3% of those two other trucks. So again, 20 to 25% of the truck trips appear to be completely different. All right, so that's kind of a high-level discussion of what we've been going through on this basic model update. Now let's talk a little bit about the toll model development. So one of our early goals was to develop procedures to estimate the impacts of tolling within the current framework of the existing MPO model. Basically, we wanted to hand back over to Pam and Syed a tool that they could use to look at tolls anywhere in the model area, even not just looking necessarily at the Ohio River crossing. So that was exactly what we've been trying to work on, and that's kind of the focal point the last few months. We did the model update and kind of got that wrapped up in July and early August, and then at the same time, July and August, we were working on building tolling procedures so we could evaluate the impact of tolls. So we wrapped up our internal test model runs in August, got all that worked out, and so we're, like I said earlier, we're kind of right now in the process of starting to evaluate alternatives. So it's going to be a little while before we publish any results because we're continuing to tweak the alignments, where interchanges are, so things are still kind of in flux. But we're still talking about the next round of public meetings sometime towards the end of this year or early in 2018. And that'll be when we start to really publish our traffic forecast for the alternatives. So what I'll talk about is kind of some high-level terms before you look at this whole little kind of transit scheme. Start with toll model testing. What we did, we looked at kind of a worst case scenario. We wanted to see, make sure the model is sensitive enough to reflect the likely amount of diversion that might happen under any possible case. You know, we're looking at scenarios where we toll one bridge, and we're talking specifically here about building Central Corridor 1, for example. Maybe we build I-69 to east, and we don't toll 41, leave 41 like it is. Maybe we build I-69 east, toll it. We toll 41 as well. Maybe we leave only 141 bridge in place. We don't toll it, or we do toll it. We had to look at, be able to evaluate each one of those scenarios using this model. So we have to test it to make sure it's capable of doing that. So what we do basically build a generic fake bridge right next to existing US 41 and run all those test cases with it and make sure the numbers that come out of that process make sense. So that's kind of what we did to do our testing, was build a generic fake bridge and run those models. And so we, through the validation process, determined that we've got a tool that we can utilize now to start looking at alternatives. One thing that I would like to make very clear is that the NEPA process in no way sets toll policy or toll rates. That comes after NEPA, after our record of decision. So all we can do is try to make reasonable assumptions right now on what the toll rates might be and what policies may or may not be in effect in the future. I can say with certainty that we're talking about electronic-only tolling. There will be no toll booths. There will be no reason to ever have to stop to pay a toll using cash. This will be 100% electronically collected. So you either use a transponder or you get a bill in the mail some weeks after you cross the bridge through video license plate. So our best example that we can use to base our assumptions on right now, again looking east of Louisville, the Ohio River Bridges Project. The toll rates that are currently in place there are what you see in front of you. If you have a transponder and a registered account, an automobile pays $2 per trip. And a semi truck at the high end pays $10 per trip. If you don't have a transponder and you're getting a bill in the mail, it's $4 for every trip. So this is again for every crossing, so a round trip would be $8. And semis are $12. So we're starting a lot of our estimation right now just using these numbers because we think this is a reasonable starting point. Our best guess right now is that we might be open to traffic as early as 2025 if funding is available and things go swimmingly moving forward. So what we started with, we're assuming these rates in place in 2025. That's, again, all subject to change, but that's a reasonable starting point for our analysis. Do you have any questions about the ORB project from the line, about the tolling and fares? Tolls are also variable in terms of moving forward. The policy in Louisville is that they can increase annually at the greater of the CPI inflation rate of 2.5% a year, starting in 2018. The project just opened with tolls in December of 2016, so we're still kind of in the first year of that. And so they held the same rate for 2017, but July of next year they can increase by 2.5% for CPI. So kind of what we've been looking at thus far in terms of how we're evaluating the alternatives, and like I said, we're kind of right in the middle of this process. Our west corridors and our assumptions right now is that we're not maintaining 41 bridge. That's really the advantage of both of those west corridors, is that we're replacing 41 bridges with a new structure. In this case, right now we think that needs to be a six-lane facility. So with any of the alternatives we're looking at, we think long-term we need at least six lanes crossing the Ohio River. Whether those are on west corridor by itself or the combination of US 41 and Central Corridor 1, we need six lanes. So the advantage there not only is it, but then the real advantage is you're getting everybody to pay a toll. At the same time, we're also reducing the long-term operations and maintenance costs. But we obviously have to take those into account. There's been some $50 million spent on maintenance on the existing US 41 bridges over the last 10 years. So that would eliminate the need to try to continue to maintain those bridges. We talked about the difference in the toll rates. Obviously, that has a big impact on what the revenue potential in any particular scenario might be. So the Louisville examples right now, they're getting about 55% transponder usage. That you would expect to increase year to year. So we're assuming we start out at about 60% by 2025 on looking at the traffic, and that will increase up to about 70 to 75% by 2025. And then Central 401, we're looking at different options for 41. What happens to the existing US 41 corridor? Do we maintain both bridges? Do we maintain one bridge? What do we do with the remnants of 41 south of the bridges if we only maintain one bridge? These things are actually being evaluated, but we're trying to use the same toll rates in general as we look at those options. Real quick, that one year on the existing traffic on the Ohio River crossing on 4020 hasn't changed dramatically in the last 20 or so years. So if I can go back and look at some of the numbers we were looking at during the original draft environmental impact statement, and the number back in 2000 was estimated to be right around 40,000 vehicles per day, which is about where we are today. The general trend lines based on these counts in the transportation cabinet going back from 1990 up to 2016, if you were to just extend that trend line straight out, it would show about 46,000 on the 41 bridge in the future. Again, we think it's going to be higher than that because of the completion of I-59 North, but if you just extend that trend line on out, you're not talking about a tremendous amount of growth. Here are the first six scenarios that we have we've tested thus far. So we've looked at, obviously, no build is always an alternative. So what happens if we don't do anything? And the numbers we're seeing there are kind of in that ballpark. We've looked at with and without the completion of I-69 to see what the differences might be. And on the high end, we're up around 50 to 51,000 vehicles per day. On the low end, it's right around that 45 to 46,000 vehicles per day. So range of potential volumes there. And then each of these other scenarios have been tested thus far. We're continuing to make refinements and tweaks to these. Like I said, we're not quite ready to release numbers, but to kind of give you some general information that we're seeing or some trends that we're seeing, one and two are very, very similar results. And as you might imagine, the only difference is whether you're west or on top of the existing 41. Simple 401, though, the variations we're seeing there are largely a result of what we did with US 41. If we leave both 41 bridges just like they are in toll free, then we're not getting anything higher than 25% of the total river crossing on I-69. So in terms of trying to pay for the project using tolls, that's very, very low potential. If we look at just maintaining a single 41 bridge, so obviously that results in some congestion on 41, diverting some traffic onto I-69, we're getting just under 50% of the total cross-river traffic on I-69. And then, if we, so I think it's generally in the 45% or so range, so again, depending on how we model that. With a single toll 41 bridge, and if we basically use the same toll rate on both I-69 and US 41, we get about 55% or so of the traffic on I-69. So we've got six scenarios we've looked at thus far. We'll probably have 30 or so before it's all said and done. I think right now we're moving into like 13 through 18. So stay tuned. More information to come. We're just not quite ready to make that public just yet. So with that, I'm willing to take any questions. I thought that took a little bit longer than I expected, but I kind of wanted to get down a little bit into the weeds on some of the stuff we're looking at. As I mentioned, you know, we're looking at basically a wide variety of concepts right now. There's really nothing that's completely off the table in terms of solar scenarios, but largely it's focusing on what we can do to maximize efficiency on both 41 and I-69, what we can do to maximize the revenue potential so we can pay for the project. The last thing that's going to happen is to get to where we were in 2004. So we've got an alternative that, from an environmental standpoint, can move forward, but we've got no way to pay for it. So, with that, do you have any questions? Of me or the project team in general? Mm-hmm. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this morning. I was just wondering, I think you said you're assuming completion of I-69 north and south as well, is that correct?
Well, no, how far south is that? Because it's really up in Kentucky, it's already signed. All in, and the parkway extends into Tennessee already. They're just not at upgrade.
Yeah, I was thinking Tennessee. I mean, like, is there any thoughts that when this becomes fully complete, that it'll attract a lot more external trips, going from the southwestern part of the country to the northeast?
I think that's the goal. I mean, let's go back to the legislation, but this was Corridor 18, and that was the intent, was to build the next I-75 and the next I-65, so you get traffic all the way from Gulf to Canada. And so ultimately, yeah, that's going to be an impact, but some of the other states are lagging well behind in that impact. We don't know how they're going to talk to Mississippi River yet. Yeah, we don't know how they're going to get into Arkansas and Texas.
Arkansas has it in their sphere as of right now, as far as you can. So they put it in the bias, but
roughly about a year ago. We're trying to be conservative right now, because especially, one thing I didn't mention is that all of the traffic forecasting and the revenue estimates that we're developing as part of NEPA, they're going to be redone for an investment study, because the bonding houses out there are so risk averse that they're going to be looking for even more conservative. We're trying to make assumptions right now that would be consistent. The Stantec has a lot of investment grade revenue studies across the country. And so that's one of the things we kind of brought to the team, was the fact that we're going to be using similar modeling practices and similar assumptions that we would use in investment grade studies. But the numbers will be different. And that's what I said earlier, that the toll rates, tolling policy, and the traffic forecast that come out of the investment study may be part of the risk. We don't think they will be, so we don't know that until we get there. But I can tell you this, the investment study is not going to assume a lot of additional traffic coming from Arkansas and Texas, because again, they want to be on the conservative side. We want to show excess revenue, if anything, but with lower traffic forecast.
Yeah, which is kind of a lot of variables with this study. I'm kind of curious, what you all are thinking as far as the completion.
Right now, we're counting on what we know, so Section 5 and 6, we can't be banking on those happening, but anything to the south is still too up in the air for us to go on to the street.
So for now, that's not going to go through over the life of the project.
That's correct.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning.
Next up on the agenda, we have other business. I don't know if there's any other business that needs to be discussed. Any other comments?
John, I'd like to ask you related to the state, the stacking blocks on the west side of the west side expressway are separating near the railroad track, and the guardrail on top has sunk about a few inches. I can't tell you how much it is for the 40 man. I looked at myself from all ways off, and I can see it. So I think the state needs to do some attention to that. West side of the expressway, the south side, near the railroad tracks, they're digging creek. parking lots. On the upside, I can see there's settling on the concrete carpet.
Probably working on projects, do some work up there sometime. We ain't equally this. I'd have to own. I don't have any comments. You know, most of the